The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So given that it's a new year and we often wish each other happy new year, I thought I'd reflect on happiness this evening. It does fit into our practice. It does fit into the path as a whole, actually. If we think about what the Buddha taught in some of his most fundamental teachings, he taught the Four Noble Truths. And while the Four Noble Truths is often described as being centered around suffering, the Four Noble Truths, there is suffering. This is suffering, there is suffering, the truth of suffering, the truth of the arising of suffering, the craving is the arising of suffering. And then the third and fourth noble truths are the ending of suffering, the possibility for the ending of suffering, and that there is a way leading to the ending of suffering. And so where does happiness fit in there is in the ending of suffering. Sometimes this ending of suffering is actually called the great happiness. But it's a pretty subtle kind of way to look at happiness, this ending of suffering. Although as we practice, as we engage and actually see in our experience what it feels like for a certain kind of tension or tightness or clinging or holding, a certain kind of reactivity to release, sometimes we might feel that. We might feel the release of some kind of a wanting or some kind of an aversion, some painful experience. And when we actually feel that release, when we experience what is described in that third noble truth, the ending of suffering, it can be one of the most happy things that we experience. I've experienced this kind of feeling of being released from a vice grip of wanting, and just have so much like ripples of delight going through as that releases. And so this ending of suffering is a very profound kind of happiness, but it's not one that we're often oriented towards. But there's different levels, different kinds of happiness, let's say. And the Buddha encouraged us to cultivate happiness in our path of practice, to cultivate many wholesome qualities. In the Eightfold Path, he mentioned the way of making effort, the way of engaging in our with our minds is to explore letting go of the difficult states, the reactive states, and cultivating the wholesome states, cultivating qualities like love and compassion and wisdom and happiness and joy and delight and tranquility. And all of these wholesome qualities we could almost look at as flavors of happiness, different flavors of happiness. But tonight I'd like to explore some more familiar kinds of happiness and how they can be, sometimes they can be, the more familiar kinds of happiness can sometimes be let's say misunderstood or held on to in a way that's not helpful. But there are ways that we can engage with happiness that is helpful, that is supportive for our practice. So just in our daily lives, living with happiness. The teaching on wise effort, the cultivation of wholesome states. That's just starting with that. The cultivation of wholesome states. The cultivation of happiness. We can cultivate. We can cultivate wholesome states in different ways. We can cultivate it by kind of actively creating conditions that will support the direction of that quality. That so for happiness, creating conditions that might support support happiness arising. But I think one of the most powerful ways to nourish these wholesome qualities is to basically recognize them, to get familiar with them, to notice them when they happen. And this is a very, I guess I can't really say it's an easy daily life practice, but it's maybe I could say it's a simple daily life practice, because these states, little simple kinds of happinesses can arise just throughout our lives. And if we notice them, if we recognize kind of the delight of seeing a tree or watching a bird fly through the air, if we can just notice these simple delights as being delight, that will cultivate this more, let's say, a less tight kind of happiness. And so the part of what I want to explore tonight is just different ways we can experience happiness, and just to name them, in the hopes that you'll begin to recognize these qualities as they just happen to arise for you in your lives. It's a beautiful thing to recognize when we are experiencing the happiness of giving, when we're experiencing the happiness of realizing that we're engaging ethically in the world. We may not even think to recognize these things, to reflect on them or remember that giving someone an easy merge on the freeway, for example, is an offering, it's a gift. We can take happiness, we can be delighted, we can have some sense of joy of that offering. And so that's a piece of what I want to offer tonight, is to kind of go through some different ways we might experience happiness and to help you begin to recognize them. But also to point to different, depths of happiness. A poem from the Buddha's time: if by giving up a lesser happiness, one could experience greater happiness, a wise person would renounce the lesser to behold the greater. And this is a way in which sometimes we get stuck, because we, in our, I think one of the key things that our organism is actually oriented towards wanting to find pleasure, a form of happiness. And the way in which we've learned to find happiness, the way in which we've learned to find pleasure habitually, is to go for the kind of quick hit of getting something that's pleasant or getting rid of something that's unpleasant. And that way of going about having happiness is pretty much, at least until I met the meditation practice, until I began to allow my mind to settle a bit in meditation, to look into my heart and mind, that's pretty much what I thought happiness was about. If I could arrange my life to have more moments of happiness, kind of string together moments of happiness, and not have moments of unhappiness, that would be as good as it got. You know, that these moments of getting what I want, getting rid of what I want, don't want, kind of stringing together these moments of getting what I want, that would pretty much be the best happiness that would be possible. And yet, the Buddha points to deeper kinds of happinesses that are possible. And so this is another thread that I want to draw through this retreat, through this talk. The different levels of happiness and how we can begin to distinguish them. So this most common kind of happiness, the one that I think we tend to go for, you know, pretty much from the time we're born, we go for finding those hits of pleasant. Our system is kind of designed this way, in a way. When we get something that we like, We get food, we get nourishment, you know, somebody changes our diaper when we're a baby, you know, just the very coming out of the womb when we get things that we like, when we're fed, when we're taken care of, when we're cleaned, you know, it feels good. We like that. There's some kind of happiness that comes from getting what we want and getting rid of the unpleasant. There's some measure of happiness in that. And this is, the Buddha acknowledges this, that there is a kind of happiness in this getting what I want and getting rid of what I don't want. But in the Buddha's understanding, this is really the least kind of happiness. And yet it is what we have put on a pedestal in our culture. This is what all of the orientation of advertising and what we're going for in our culture often is heading in this direction of getting these moments of happiness, getting rid of these moments of unpleasantness, having pleasant, getting rid of unpleasant. And so in this movement of getting what we want, I mean, the key thing that we begin to see and understand as we explore in our minds, you know, why is this a lesser kind of happiness? Partly it's a lesser kind of happiness because it's mixed up with a quality in the mind of craving. That when we want something, when we're craving, when we're trying to lean towards getting something that we want, essentially we are, that the craving itself, as we begin to explore what the experience of craving is, you know, this pattern that we have of wanting something and getting it and being happy about that often is driven by this mechanism of the craving, the sense of needing to have something. But what we miss often in this process is that when we are craving, the craving itself is a quality that feels tight. It doesn't feel good. It feels, the quality of craving, the quality of that wanting, as soon as it springs up, there is a feeling of lack already. The very quality of craving comes with a feeling of dissatisfaction, of not having, of feeling something's off. And so right in this whole process, we are kind of, essentially when we are craving something and wanting to get that thing, we're essentially like ignoring this unpleasantness and this painful quality of the craving, this constriction around the craving. Because we feel like at certain point in the future, we'll get that thing we want and then we'll be okay. So I'm willing to put up with this unpleasant experience right now, which often we're not even consciously aware of because we're kind of living in the future. We're living in that moment where we're going to get that thing, living in that moment of anticipation, not really present right now. And so, you know, when we get that thing, we get that thing, we get that thing, we get rid of that thing, a big piece, we have some happiness with the having. You know, we get some happiness from getting the thing that we like. But a big part of the happiness that comes and the feeling of, oh, figured it out, got it, that comes when we get what we want is that the wanting, the craving goes away. And that craving was just a construct in the mind. And so this kind of happiness that comes from getting what we want, this kind of movement of habit of this is the way happiness will happen, is really bound up with this quality of wanting, of craving, that makes it a lesser kind of happiness. Because we are allowing as we go through our lives motivated by this engine of craving, we are allowing ourselves to be in a state of dissatisfaction for a lot of time. And so the kind of happiness that we get, I mean, that, and the happiness, the other reason why this happiness is one of the lesser kinds of happiness, because the things that we are going for in terms of getting what I want, getting rid of what I don't want, they are unreliable, they are impermanent, they don't last that long. You know, everything that happens in our lives has a quality of coming into being and falling apart. Certain things come into being, last for a certain length of time, sometimes longer than others, but they will always fall apart. And so this other reason why this is a lesser kind of happiness is because if we are kind of hanging our hat on this thing, saying, this is what's going to make me happy, this is what's going to make me happy, we're kind of attributing some kind of a permanence to this happiness. Kind of this is going to do it for me. It is destined to not be a lasting happiness because what we are hanging our hat on is impermanent and unreliable. And so this is a form of happiness, and the Buddha actually points to, as householders, we earn wealth. We need to engage in getting income so that we can buy things and take care of our families. And he says there is a happiness that can come with this. The happiness that he says that comes from the getting of the of our income, he attributes the happiness there not to the having of the wealth or having of the money. He attributes it to the happiness of knowing we have received this money in a wholesome way, that we have engaged in an ethical livelihood to have this income. That's where he says the happiness can come from having wealth. And then he goes a little further and says, and then we can also have happiness from wealth in terms of being generous with it. So we can offer it to support our families, to take care of ourselves, and to be generous with others. And so this too is a way that we can have happiness in kind of everyday ways. And so I want to go back for a moment to the happiness of sense pleasure, the happiness of getting what I want. I pointed to this as a kind of a lesser kind of happiness. That it's a lesser kind of happiness, I'd say, when it's driven by this craving, when it's bound up with craving, when it's the craving that's pushing us towards the pleasant and pushing us to get rid of the unpleasant. But almost paradoxically, when we begin to really meet the present moment experience, when we start being here for just the simplicity of, you know, taking a walk or looking at the stars or appreciating a sunrise or a sunset, when we're there for those things without grasping on them, without needing to hold on to it for any reason, but just there with it, there's a way in which there's a happiness that comes. It's like the delight of being with that pleasure when we're not holding on to it. And so this, the kind of, it's almost like just the delight of life, the delight of being present with our lives. And paradoxically, as we let go of the kind of craving for having sense pleasure, we get more of these just almost gifts of pleasure. The other day, I had a kind of surprising one. Not what I would have expected. I was, you know, kind of moving through my house and I had a bunch of stuff in my hands and I dropped something. And as I dropped this thing, it was a little mint container, and the mint container burst open and the mint scattered everywhere. And I was just right there with this, like, experience of seeing these mint scattering. I was like, wow, look at that. Scattering mints. They're just making this pattern on the carpet. And it was just this moment of delight, a moment of happiness, of just seeing this, of being there for this. And it was notable to me because, typically my response would have been impatience in that moment. And so not only did I have that moment of delight, of just being there for the seeing of this kind of pattern appearing, but there was the delight of not having the impatience arise because I was right there. And so, paradoxically, we can have more like little moments of delight, sense pleasure delight, as this the craving for having things to be a certain way begins to weaken in our minds. And so this is one level of happiness, the happiness of sense pleasure, and there's a way in which the happiness of sense pleasure can be very wholesome. And there's a way in which the happiness of sense pleasure can kind of keep us hooked to this delusion that's connected with craving, that the only way I'm going to be happy is if I get these things and get rid of these things. This, the mind that's kind of embedded in that craving can't really understand that there's other ways to happiness. And that's one of the one of the things that we begin to appreciate is that there are other ways to happiness than just simply, going through life, getting what I want, getting rid of what I don't want. And so the happiness in relationship, another kind of level of happiness, that we're engaged as lay people, we're engaged in many relationships. And one of the ways that we can find happiness in relationship, one of the key teachings the Buddha offered in terms of happiness in relationship, is the teaching around generosity, of giving. There's a famous, I think it's in the commentaries and not in the Buddhist texts, but a teaching that says that generosity has the power to make you happy before you give a gift, while you're giving a gift, and after you give a gift. That if you engage with giving in a way of wholehearted, kind of open-hearted connection, rather than kind of weighing costs and thinking about, will I get something back? So the kind of giving that creates this happiness is a kind of an unconditional giving. It's a giving that is just giving for the wish that someone have happiness in what you're offering. And so we can explore this possibility of giving. Now, the quality of generosity is something that I think grows in us. We may find out initially in an exploration of giving that we have some kind of holding back or a feeling of, well, if I give something, will I get something in return? A kind of wanting to not overstretch and give something unless, I know that the relationship is going to be reciprocal in some way. And so these are things that we begin to explore. We begin to recognize that there may be some kind of implicit limitations on our giving. And it's not to say that we should judge ourselves for that, because it's kind of, we've all been conditioned this way. We've all been conditioned to maybe be a little stingy or be a little, careful about our vulnerability in terms of offering something. And so we, you know, to notice that, to look at that, to see when that comes up. This is part of our practice. We don't deny what's here. And actually, I may have a chance to speak a little more about this later. As we start to, another form of happiness can happen as we start to fully acknowledge everything that's happening in here. You know, to not have these kind of ideas of, oh, that's not good. I shouldn't have that happening. Instead, having a relationship to it, oh, that's a painful way to navigate the world. And wow, I've done that a lot in my life. This has been conditioned. I see this as conditioned. And there can be a kind of a heart that holds everything. A heart that is able to recognize and hold stinginess and hold that, oh, I don't really want to give that. There can be a heart that recognizes, oh yeah, that stinginess arising. Oh yeah, and that hurts a little bit. The stinginess hurts a little bit. But the mind that recognizes it and knows, oh, that stinginess. Oh, that's just happening because it's conditioned. That kind of a larger container that is the awareness is holding that stinginess in. There can be almost a joy. In fact, there can be a joy. It's not even almost a joy. There can be a joy that comes through just the seeing of it. Just the seeing, oh, that's happening right now. I'll try to talk more about that later. Get back to happiness in relationship. So giving connects us to others. It's a connecting thing. And so that very connection also begins to open us to other forms of happiness in relationship. The quality of connection itself is this quality of care, of kindness, of the quality of connection, the open heart in relationship to meeting other people. That quality is a quality of love. And so this, you know, the quality of generosity can open us to connection, and that can open us to the feeling of caring, the feeling of compassion, of appreciation for others. And so this is another aspect of happiness in relationship, that we can begin to feel these qualities, the qualities of kindness, of caring, of compassion, and of joy in relationship. When the heart feels open, when the heart is not constricted, when the heart is able to resonate with others, that heart will naturally kind of reach out and connect. And in that connection, if the other person is experiencing something challenging or difficult, our heart will resonate with that in the quality of compassion. We might not think about compassion as being a form of happiness, but it's connected to this heart that is open, connected to the heart that can be happy. And this heart too, when it connects with someone who is experiencing delight and happiness, that heart resonates with joy. And so these are also qualities of happiness that we can meet in our lives. And I often, just in a very simple way, you know, one of the simple things that I explore in my practice, it just seems so simple these days, of just how is the heart? Does the heart feel, and it's a feeling, does the heart feel soft and open, receptive? Or does the heart feel constricted, fearful, tight. And if it feels constricted, fearful, tight, then the practice is, can there be a bigger container in which that can be okay? Can that be held with some kind of friendliness itself, some kind of connection? Not to say that tight heart, that's got to go, that's bad, that's a problem. You know, that's bringing that movement of unfriendliness into that relationship. And so the way in which we, you know, move in the direction of the connectedness is to see if we can have a bigger container in which we can feel connected to feeling disconnected. Can we hold this sense of tightness and contraction with some measure of, it's okay that's happening. That is the way, the path by which the heart will begin to soften and release. And when my heart is feeling this open, unconstricted, connected feeling, I just appreciate that. Recognizing it, that the very recognition of that, you know, the feeling of open, connected, soft, that recognition, when there is a recognition of that feeling, it's like our mind, recognizing that, knows at a very intuitive and deep level, that is helpful. That is a direction that my heart wants to go. And so that recognition helps the heart kind of move in that direction. It's such a simple thing, but it is so powerful to just simply recognize that, you know, that subtle shift of the heart. Another form of happiness in relationship is when we know that we're engaging in a way that doesn't harm other people. And recognizing that we're engaging in a way that doesn't harm other people. Sometimes we're engaging in ways that don't harm other people a lot, and we don't recognize it. But we do recognize it when we do something that creates some suffering. And that may happen, you know, much less often, but we kind of highlight that. And we beat ourselves up about it. But we don't acknowledge for ourselves the many, many times that we're not doing that, that we are engaging in a way that's not harming other people. And so again, it's useful to recognize this. You know, are you, you know, driving on the freeway? Are you driving in a way that, like when I was driving today here, I really kept quite a distance between myself and the person in front of me. And, you know, it's a way of kind of creating safety in that situation. And that can be a simple recognition of creating safety. So there can be many, many ways that we can acknowledge and recognize. You know, at the end of a day, maybe you could just recognize, yes, in this day, there were many ways in which I did not add harm to the world. And we can even just reflect simply, you know, just at this level. If everyone on the planet today, this moment, decided never to kill another human being, we would be in such a different world. And here we have engaged in a day of not killing other human beings. it's not a small thing. We kind of don't appreciate the depth of support that gives to our world. You know, I'm actually kind of amazed at how well things basically work a lot of the time. You know, there are problems in our world, for sure. And yet, we can sit in this room together and have a sense of safety. And that's not a small thing. And so we can notice the beautiful side of ethics. Notice the beautiful side of engaging in non-harming. Instead of associating ethics with thou shalt not all the time and the guilt side, I think often we associate ethics with the side of guilt. Can we appreciate that we're engaging in ethical behavior so much of the time? And then in terms of, you know, the kind of more happiness that comes with our practice internally, there's the happiness that comes just with the settling of the mind. I mentioned this earlier, that before I began meditating, you know, I didn't really have an appreciation. I stumbled into settled mind at times. I remember one time so clearly that I stumbled into a very settled mind. It felt like an altered state. I was, you know, on a vacation, and I just had been doing a lot to get somewhere, and I sat down and just stared out at the landscape, and there was just waves of happiness that washed over me. And it lasted for hours. And now I recognize that as a form of concentration. I'd never experienced anything like that before. And so we can stumble into that kind of happiness where the mind gets just quiet. It stops thinking about the past and the future. And it's just here. It's just here and with experience. It can be such a bliss, a happiness in that, as the mind kind of releases its thoughts. And so that's a form of happiness. That's in one of the teachings, the Buddha said, I see people wanting things, doing things, you know, running around and trying to get what they want, and I don't envy them. He said, because I know a more delightful happiness. And actually, and then he said, and I even know a happiness that surpasses the bliss of concentration. But he did point to this happiness of concentration as being a part of our path. As being a step on our path to, you know, for me, there was, when I first started my practice, I was suffering so much that just sitting down and paying attention to my breath was like a huge relief. It's like, wow, I don't have to think about all that stuff now. I can just like pay attention to my breath. And there was just this sense of like the mind gathering and settling. And it was such a relief. It was so helpful to just realize the mind could let go of that stuff for a little while. And so in a way, we learned that with these different levels of happiness, we can kind of, you know, let go of what we count on or what we habitually do to engage in the world by, you know, stepping into a different kind of happiness for moments of time, for just, it's almost like we can let go of certain habits of mind by cultivating more helpful habits of mind. And the practice of settling the mind in concentration, whether that's, you know, orienting around just one experience or allowing the mind to settle more broadly, as we were doing in the guided meditation, where I encourage you not to necessarily like ignore everything, but but just like allow the breath to be at the center, but not resist that there's a lot of stuff happening. That also can settle the mind. The movement into being here in the present moment, whether we're focused on one thing or just with a kind of changing flow of experience, both are settling forms of concentration. Both can really bring a lot of delight and happiness, even bliss. And then there's more, another level of happiness or another kind of happiness in the practice that I was referring to earlier that comes more with the mind as it begins to open to challenge and be able to navigate it in a new way. The mind that can recognize, oh, this is anger arising, and not be caught up in the belief of anger that I've got to, you know, get my retribution against this person. This person has got to suffer. You know, these kind of beliefs of anger that make us want to punish other people. You know, instead of being caught up in the beliefs of anger, we can just know, oh, this is the experience of anger. This is what anger feels like. Now, at first, when we start to recognize that, it is not a happy feeling, I have to say. It is not one of delight. When I first started noticing, oh, this is anger, I wasn't like, oh, yay. It was like, wow, that really hurts. This is painful. And yet, this is the first step. You know, this is really the first step to have a new relationship with our reactive emotions. That we begin to, instead of following through on them, believing their story, we turn towards the experience itself. Whatever reactive emotion is happening, frustration, confusion, anger, hatred, rage, impatience, even small ones, irritation, wanting. If instead of following through on them, we say, well, what is it like to be a human being that's experiencing that? This is the movement of mindfulness around these difficult emotions. And initially what we experience is that they are very painful. They feel painful to be arising. But this is actually how our mind begins to get an education, how our mind begins to understand that these things aren't helpful, that this is not the way to happiness. And so this is how we are learning about happiness here. We are learning about what is not happiness in this stage. You know, when we see, wow, that anger, that confusion, that irritation, that hurts, that does not seem to be the way to happiness in the present moment. And yet, as we continue practicing, we begin to have a strong container that can hold so much, that can be aware of a pattern arising, kind of like my seeing the mints exploding on the carpet. It's like, wow, that's impatience arising. Isn't that amazing? The mind can have that kind of spaciousness around our reactive emotions. It's kind of like, wow, that is just amazing. How that just arose and just, it's like seeing fireworks go off. There could be a mind that holds that, and in the mind being bigger that's holding it, sometimes we are not so caught up or identified in the difficult or reactive emotion, and we're more kind of stepped back into the mind that recognizes it and recognizes that this is just something arising right now. And that mind can be just simply appreciative of that knowing, of that recognition, and also appreciative. The other way this can be joy-producing is that we recognize, oh, I'm seeing this. I don't have to follow through on this. I don't have to get caught by this. I don't have to be tied up in knots around this anger. I can just be with it and know that it will pass because it's an impermanent phenomenon. It will go away. And so there's a lot of delight and joy that comes essentially with the understanding around how the practice works. And then, as I mentioned earlier, the happiness of non-suffering is also possible that we can touch into. We can touch into the happiness of non-suffering. And we can do this in daily life as well. You know, actually, there's a lot of moments in our day when we're not suffering, and we just don't recognize it. We just miss it completely. I mean, just imagine right now, you know, that you... I'm going to take you through a little guided thought experiment. You have a broken leg. You have a cast above your knee, and you're hobbling around on crutches to get through your day. You know, you have to maneuver your way in and out of bed to get out of bed in the morning and make sure your crutches are there. You have to find your way. You know, I live upstairs, so I would have to, like, get myself downstairs, jumping on one foot down the stairs the whole way. You know, this is a lot of effort. And then there's, like, you know, preparing breakfast. And, you know, I live alone, so, you know, I just imagine myself hopping on one foot around, maybe, like, having one crutch. And it's like, this is a lot of work and a struggle. It's a struggle to have a broken leg. And now imagine that cast is gone and you can freely move through your house, easily walk down the stairs. This is kind of like the happiness of not suffering. You know, we live in this kind of place for some parts of our day, some of us more than others through our day, where there are things that are not a problem. But we don't usually recognize what's not a problem. And so again, there are opportunities for acknowledging and recognizing there's no problem right now. And what does that feel like? The happiness of no problem is subtle. And yet it is kind of that flavor of, you know, suddenly a cast is gone. Suddenly you can maneuver. You know, there are things that could be happening right now that would be make things much more difficult. And so can we appreciate what is not a problem as opposed to orienting towards where we think there are problems? So there's, you know, simple ways we might do this, you know, like... one of my favorite places to do this is when I'm driving, in particular when I stop at a stoplight. You know, the mind produces this, well, this is a problem, I've got to get where I'm going, you know. But that's just the mind doing something. You know, is there actually a problem right now? I'm sitting here at a stoplight. There's nothing to do but wait until the light turns green. There is no problem. And can I appreciate that? Can I recognize this place of no problem? It's close to the quality of peace. Peace. We might think of peace as being something different than that, but just this place where there's nothing to need to do in this moment. There's a lot of places like this in our day we might be able to check into. I find, you know, certain moments of the day are useful, like when you've finished a meal, before you've gotten up to take care of the cleaning. In that moment, just this the kind of tipping point there. You know, is it a moment of no problem? Can it be a moment of no problem? Maybe you can find moments like that in your day. And in that place, so what does it feel like when there's no problem? You know, how is the body? Does the body feel at ease? Our minds can create many problems. And so, again, this is a subtle thing because we tend to orient towards where the problem is. Like I find myself, as soon as I finished a meal, it's like, well, the next problem is to clean the dishes, as opposed to recognizing, yeah, it's no problem to just sit here for this moment. When I can remember that, there's a moment of relaxation and there's a moment of, oh, just being here with just the simplicity of sitting at my table for a few moments. It sounds like nothing, but we can begin to appreciate this very subtle taste of it's okay right now. And that, like I was saying earlier, that as we begin to recognize these different kinds of happiness, they begin to point themselves out to us. We begin to recognize them more. Because as the cultivation, as we're mindful of what's helpful, what's wholesome, it creates the conditions for it to happen more. Because as we're mindful of what's wholesome, as we see those moments of, you know, as I said, those moments of kind of like, oh, this is just something difficult arising. I can be with this. There's a way in which our heart feels that kind of softening. And our system understands, it's like our organism understands, this is helpful. This is the way to a deeper kind of happiness. And so when we recognize those moments, it's like we're giving our system an education in these qualities, helping our system to recognize, oh yeah, this is useful. This is valuable. We can so easily miss what is valuable for moving us in this direction of a deeper happiness. So I do wish you a happy new year. May your new year bring you a deeper kind of happiness. And we do have a couple of minutes if there's any comments or questions, reflections you'd like to offer about anything. Maybe we can just sit here for a couple of minutes wishing happiness. May all beings be happy. May all beings have a happy new year. May we all be happy, healthy, safe, and at ease. And remembering as we explore a wish of happiness for all beings, that we are included in that. And so we are wishing ourselves well at the same time. Happiness is not a zero-sum game. In wishing happiness for others, and in resonating with happiness for others, we find it reverberates and multiplies. It's not that there's just a certain amount of happiness to go around. At one point, the Dalai Lama is said to have said, "It is good to take delight in the happiness of others because then you increase your chances of happiness 6 billion to 1. May all beings be happy."
Thank you for your attention.